Good evening. It's Wednesday, March 30th, and you're listening to Beyond Tilted, a podcast of hope, despair, and rampant fanboyism. I'm your host, Kyle Pett, and with me, as always, Andrew Green and Peter Shepard. How are you doing this evening, boys?
Great. Fantastic, I will say for myself. Andy, it would seem, not as good, right?
No.
Well, I mean, generally speaking, but I'm doing okay.
Traffic woes.
Well, it's DC. It happens.
I appreciate the heads up. I really do. I appreciate the heads up. I wish more people were conscientious about that sort of thing if they know they can't make it. There's no excuse.
I mean, I feel bad for you a little bit more if Pete and I didn't live around the busiest highway on the continent.
Yeah, almost in the world. I mean, we're consistently top five. Toronto's traffic, top five worst in the world by almost every metric that matters. So, average commute.
The 401.
Oh, yeah. No, it's generally okay here. It's just the problem when it's bad here, it's a parking lot.
Yeah.
See, it's just like that every day.
Every day.
Because for some reason we have our entire highway in a circle. So if something happens at one end, it just travels around the circle forever until it becomes a traffic jam.
Lord knows why all the people rushing into the West End back home to Hamilton are rushing home to Hamilton at all. Dun-dun-dun. Little joke for anyone not from Hamilton.
To be fair, they usually use the Gardner in the queue, not 401.
Okay, that's true. You caught me. You caught me.
Anyway,
right.
We do talk about video games on this podcast.
Yeah, every now and then. Every now and then. This is your local Toronto traffic forecast. Yeah, no.
So what have you been playing, Andy?
Oh, this is going to be a long one. quick note. I've been playing Destiny again. And if you're holding on to the Arminus D package, you should get the third roll for this week before Sunday, or you're really missing out. I have been playing a bit of League of Legends, but the big thing that has destroyed my time this week is Sultan Sanctuary, which is the most Metroidvania
game
I've played.
But I have no idea what it is. I'm like, you're like, I'm just going to go back to playing this. I'm like, I have no idea what the hell you're playing.
Do you know what Castlevania Symphony of the Night is?
Yes.
Okay. Do you know what Super Metroid is?
Yes.
Okay, take those games.
So it's a Metroidvania game.
With Dark Souls.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I was watching him play, actually.
Right there, when you said that it's mixed with Dark Souls, I'm out.
I'd say it's more forgiving than Dark Souls, though.
Yes and no. You die a hell of a lot more in this game, but also it matters a lot less. Hmm. Because there's usually a spawn point like 20 feet away.
Right.
So it can be frustrating running your face into a wall trying to figure out the trick, but it's also really, the game starts off so, oh, it's 2D Dark Souls, look, I can parry, it's kind of neat, and then just opens the fuck up. Look, you're running on the ceiling, you're doing wall jumps while running on the ceiling, so you have to jump down. Oh, I've fallen into the sky and I am dead. It's some cool shit that can happen. They really use the most... They get the most out of their mechanics.
I like when you told me that you can actually play it as a spellcaster, too. I wasn't expecting that, because you just played as a ninja when I was watching. So.
Yes, I found a sword I liked and I kind of stuck with it.
Yeah. Nice.
And I made it early on in the game that precluded me from being able to use magic. Will not be making that decision on my next playthrough.
So have you played anything else, or is that that it?
Oh, I've played plenty of other things, but
those are the big ones.
I played
Pete,
some Galaxy,
how about you?
I don't play video games. No, I played a little bit of League. It's hard not to at the moment. This is actually the worst patch since Season 6 started, in my opinion. And this isn't Sky is Falling like I was originally with 80 carries becoming playmakers and stuff like that. I remember at the start, if you remember. But this is the worst patch. A lot of the balance changes seemed kind of like, why? Kind of shrugged. And I know why. It's because the playoffs are coming up, so they don't want to release anything too wonky because they want the players to be able to practice in their spare time. So that's why. I understand why it's so backwards and feels kind of weird, but still, it's a little bit of a piss-off to me. So you just got to get me mindful of that. But I've been having some fun trying out Scion Jungle, trying out or continuing Trundle Jungle. Very fun. I'm going to take this opportunity here so we don't, because I don't think there's a place later on in the show to mention it. So that game I was talking to you guys about in the pre-show, Orcs Must Die Unchained. So I played a little bit of two. I played a decent amount of one. Always found it to be a pretty fun game, right?
Yeah.
You played with me a little bit, Kyle Pep.
We played a little bit of the second one.
So the first game, if you remember, there was just one style of play, basically. You had one hero, and the second one, they added the second one. In this one, there are four to start with, and they're going to be releasing a new hero on a regular basis when the game is released, like a pipeline. Remember that game? I don't think we've covered it on the podcast, unfortunately, but remember that game I've been looking for? It seems to elude me. I want that PvE, but with PvP potential, multiplayer or single player or co-op versus player versus environment or PvP if I want it to be, with an RPG leveling system and fun just, you know, mash buttons and kill a lot of shit. Remember that game I've been asking about? I've wanted? Oh, sorry, with regular new heroes released on a schedule. That's the game I've pretty much been looking for. Seems like it would be pretty difficult to find a game like that. Well, maybe look no further, although I just installed it before the podcast, and I'm not certain, like, I haven't played it yet. I'm going to play it afterwards and report back in. Hopefully, that is the game that I report in next week as to what I am playing, because it looks like a lot of fun, and I hope you guys join me sometime later this week.
Can you play as a necromancer? Because that was one of your big things you were always saying about this fabled game.
I mean, they don't have... in that games which have necromancer classes, I have not been able to play for one reason or another. And games in which I have been able to play necromancers, generally speaking, they suck. Or they're not quite necromancers, like the Witch Doctor in Diablo 3 and such, right? Yeah, no, it's the curse. Could they release a necromancer down the line? Hopefully. I would pay DLC money for that, which looks to be the model they're going with. It's a free-to-play game, by the way. So check it out, Orcs Must Die Unchained. The beta opened today on Steam. What have you been playing, Kyle Pep?
A little bit of this, a little bit of that. Obviously, playing some WoW, as I do most weeks, as you all roll your eyes at me. Yeah.
Actually, I just tuned you out.
Yeah, thanks. Love you, too. Played a little bit more of The Division. Played some Halo. Jumping in at that when I've got, 20, 30 minutes to kill.
In between when?
In between... No, in between, I finished watching something, and I'm going out in, a half hour, and it's can't really start watching something else.
Right.
And I can't really play anything else, whereas I can, jump in and play a couple of arena games in Halo.
Yeah.
I can knock those out. So that's nice.
Mm-hmm.
Play a bit of that. We'll
learn next week that this half-hour time period that you couldn't fill is what led Kyle Pett to cocaine.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely not the way I interpreted it originally, but it is the way I choose to interpret it now.
I also finished Daredevil on Saturday.
No response from him. That's almost as bad as admission of guilt.
But, I'm choosing to ignore you.
What did you play on Saturday?
I finished Daredevil.
Oh, yes. Okay.
The excellent Netflix show that everyone should watch because it was great.
I might actually wait until I get
to the ending. Was a little meh, but everything else about the season was pretty great.
Yeah, the ending to this season was... The ending to the last season was, a high point.
Mm-hmm.
But the ending of this season, I was kind of expecting a little bit more. They kind of made it seem like there was going to be a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to give anything away yet.
Because I haven't seen it yet. I just finished House of Cards myself, so... Yeah.
Well, and I also don't want to spoil it for our listeners.
Oh, yeah, of course, our listeners. Oh.
our listeners.
Yeah, we care because we care.
Less
about
concerned
you.
About you, I'm more concerned about our listeners.
Because we care about you.
Because spoilers hurt. Spoilers hurt.
I love spoilers, actually. So
I know you do. So my boss got caught up on the last season of Game of Thrones. Mm-hmm. And as you all know, I've given up on Game of Thrones.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a big book fan. And I was like, fuck it. I'm waiting till Winds of Winter.
Mm-hmm.
The TV show started to piss me off. And I'm like, I'm out.
Yeah,
I am with you on that part, but I'm not waiting for the book.
I thought the third season was like, or no, the fourth season was crap. Right?
Yeah.
They're going into season six, right?
Hire Falcor! Yeah, I'm out.
Yeah. The ending of the fourth season really pissed me off. I'm like, it felt like they started to change things in the fourth season simply to change things and be different.
Mm-hmm. Without spoiling, it got real anime, right?
A little bit.
That, wow. So, yeah. And that's you saying that, too. You're like our second most anime person, I think.
There's a difference between good and bad.
Yeah.
So, the other thing is, I was very good at not... I left everyone I worked with in the dark.
Mm-hmm.
About all the major plot things, all this stuff.
Yep.
And as some of you may or may not know, the TV show has caught up to and passed the books on most storylines.
Especially if you read the TV guide, little tidbit or whatever about the episodes.
Some storylines are further eclipsed than most. However, within about 12 hours of having completely caught up on Game of Thrones, he decided to spoil something for me that I hadn't read yet. And I'm like, you know, thanks. Like, 5 years. 5 years I haven't ruined things for you.
Keep in mind that I had an opening to my last season of my comic strip that would have killed in the Game of Thrones crowd. And I chose not to do it because I didn't want to spoil it for you. And, of course, the other, you know, audience.
Oh, the thing you're referring to happened in the books. That's not the...
Oh, it did?
Yeah.
Already?
Yeah.
Well, it's coming out sometime soon then. Fuck you.
Your viewer will be so happy.
Because yeah, I thought
I assume we're talking about that.
One second. Because I asked you about it, didn't I? Nope.
No.
Nope.
Well, for you folks at home, I hope you're enjoying listening to some cryptic bullshit conversation.
and a couple of Skype alerts. Oh no. I'm sorry, guys. But I'm not sorry.
You should be.
Yeah.
You're the worst.
Anyway, let's discuss the news stories of the past week.
Yeah, because I have nothing. I mean, my only news story really was that Orcs Must Die thing, guys. I'm so out of the loop right now. Please.
Yep. All
right.
You decided to blow your news load in your...
What I've been playing. Well, because I'm excited. I want to go play it. Like, let's rush through this thing so I can
rush
play
through
it.
This. Yeah. So I have a couple. Andy, I don't know whether you have any or not.
I do as well. I only have like two real quick.
Alright, well, how about you go first?
Alright, thank you, sir.
Quick one.
So, to start us off, turns that NX leak, rumored NX leak, turns out totally actually a fake.
Yeah.
Just somebody 3D printing exactly what they put in the in their prototype that they put up for copyright. And yep, two people did it at the same time, completely without being aware of the other one doing it, and tricked each other into thinking that it was real.
That's
pretty
kind
weird
of
thing
hilarious.
To happen.
Wow.
Kind of hilarious.
And that's what gave the rumors credence, because the first one, it's like, well, this is fake, and then the second one came out, wait, maybe not.
Wow.
So, I'm hoping that this one has a little bit of discussion into it. Mm. So, I've always been a big Roller Coaster Tycoon fan. I like the whole idea of building a theme park.
Mm-hmm.
And there are currently three being built right now.
What?
There's Roller Coaster Tycoon World, is, you know, the mainline sequel. There's one that's being built by the team that built Roller Coaster Tycoon 3. And it's in an alpha right now. And then there's a third that's built in the style of Roller Coaster Tycoon 1 and 2 that got kickstarted last year.
Mm-hmm.
So Roller Coaster Tycoon World was supposed to come out soon. I'm not exactly sure the date.
Soon TM? Or soon?
They had a release date.
Mm-hmm.
They've now delayed, and they've switched to an early access model with no schedule for final release. Now, they are offering refunds. So it's just kind of funny that this comes 2 weeks after we discussed this and how this was last week, so it really only would have been a week removed from our discussion on early access and how much we hate it. I just thought, you know, they're still doing it.
Who's the publisher?
Atari, I think, used to do it.
I didn't know you were such a big fan of those games. I'm actually kind of surprised by that.
You may want to wait until, like, the City Skylines guys decide to make a free...
I think the City Skylines guys are doing one. I think
finish that one.
Well, you guys both got SimCity, right?
We did.
Yes,
both.
We've all made terrible mistakes.
And
in
actually
our lives.
Played that together, like, because there was multiplayer in it, right?
There was.
Yes, yeah. Pointless multiplayer where you're both Time Lords and your cities exist in different timelines. So when you try to trade resources, it's like, oh, sorry, I won't get those for another 3 years in my city.
Yes, Atari is the publisher.
The game was fucked in weird ways.
Now, the other one, the one that's by the older development team, they have an early access as well. However, their early access is more money. Thoughts on that? Where they're making you pay more for early access.
Interesting. They're making you pay more? Do you get more?
No. You just get to play the game earlier in an unfinished state.
Pre-order now when you can get into the beta on March
16th. That makes no sense. I mean, you know, a couple weeks ago we did a show on early access. That sounds like the sort of scum we were talking about with early access. The sort of scheme.
See, I'm more...
You can exploit.
I prefer... that because it deters the people who just want to play the game early, where and charging that $10 more it will be the people who really want to play it and help you make the game better.
Really? Are you kidding?
Yeah, I think so.
You're charging more to people who are receiving the game in an incomplete state and beta testing it. You're basically charging people to beta test your game for you.
Look, QA departments are expensive and do good work. So what we want to do is we want to completely offset those costs by hiring no one qualified and will not report any of our bugs.
Yeah, I have huge problems with that, man. And no bonus, no benefit whatsoever, like not even a token. Like
it's real bad.
That's pretty brutal, man. Actually, I don't get that at all. That sounds murky as shit. I mean, you know, 10 years ago, people were going ape shit over Hellgates. It wasn't early access, but still, their elite system or whatever. You know, being elite player versus non-elite player for the monthly subscription sounds like that.
Yeah.
Where you're just because what ended up happening, was that the monthly subscribers basically were getting nothing extra for free by the end of it because they realized how awful that was. This is just that. You're paying more money and you're not really getting anything in return.
I mean, you're getting the game early.
You'd have to be a huge
fan. Why don't they just put a donate button next to the launcher for the game?
How? Yeah. How much earlier? And what sort of is this, like the indie company? If it's the indie company, I'll maybe give them a pass. But
yeah, it looks like it's indie-ish.
Like we have the $40 million startup money from venture capitalists that we need,
and also Tim Schafer for some reason he showed up.
We don't have the $50 million, so that $50 million we need you guys to pay for.
I now withdraw it being indie-ish. It's the guys who created Elite Dangerous.
Yeah, that's
so. It's not even an indie company.
Not really anymore.
Not even remotely. Yeah, that's terrible. That is the worst.
They weren't after Elite Dangerous.
They are the worst. I'm sorry. Yeah. We're gonna disagree on that, but
no, they appear to be a smaller studio.
Mm-hmm. No Man's Sky. Oh, sorry, that came up in the Wikipedia article. I just quickly looked at Elite Dangerous. They said to look at that also. My bad. Yeah. So, sorry, the benefits is it creates a community that you know you can bilk for more money down the line? Like, what happens when they want to release DLC that's, you know, overpriced for what you're getting?
Well, you see, if you pay $15 more, you can get DLC early.
Yeah, that's a bad precedent, and I hope it backfires.
It won't.
Overwatch early access, help us stress test our servers on multi-platforms, and you get the game a month before it's coming out. Cool, thanks Blizz. Yeah, we're not going to give you anything extra, but you know,
that's a different type of early access.
Okay, what's different about it?
One, it's open beta. They're giving you, if you pre-order the game, they're giving you early access into the open beta.
Okay.
Which they're running anyway.
Doesn't that make it a non-open beta?
No. The early access is like 3 days. They're giving you
There's
3 days.
Test.
No. Of early access. Before it completely opens up.
Is it only 3 days? I thought it was like a couple weeks.
No, it's only like it's at most a week.
All right.
Well, this goes into my second news story real well.
Mm-hmm. I don't want to talk about what I'm assuming that second news story is.
What is it?
I just want to quickly mention that the entirety of the Dark Souls 3 release has been handled terribly.
That wasn't where I thought you were going.
It came out in Japan 3 weeks before it came out to the rest of the world, except for if you have an Xbox One, you could just download the English client. It works. It doesn't have online, but it works.
They didn't read your lock.
Because the day one patch is what makes the online component work. So if you care about the online components, which you probably should, that's a bummer. But I'm already seeing just hundreds and hundreds of people like, hey, I've already beaten the game. And I still can't play it for another 2 weeks. And I pre-ordered. After my whole thing about how you shouldn't pre-order, I put down the $5 so GameStop would actually have a physical copy for me. And now I've learned they may not even have that, because pre-ordering is still bullshit. And I'm an idiot.
You know, I understand why companies want to enforce that pre-ordering at the store level, and then why the stores take that on. That data gets fed back to the company so they know roughly how well their game's going to sell. But if they really believed in their product, they wouldn't need those sorts of stats anyway. And it kind of benefits the store, because then the store gets to keep your money at an interest-free loan. And,
yep.
Yeah. Well,
and
I mean, it also made more... Pre-ordering made a lot more sense in the days where there really was a limited supply chain.
Yeah.
And there were
bottlenecks. I would like a physical copy,
and
honestly, if I go to the store and they don't have it, I'm just going to fucking download it.
They artificially enhanced... Let's say they certainly fluffed that bottleneck up, though. They certainly... Right? I know the EB games that I went to usually fluff okay. that up.
So some of them are worse than others. Mm. If you're getting it at a big box store, you can literally walk in. Because for some reason, big box stores just order however many they feel like. Yeah.
Best Buy, Walmart, they don't give a shit.
Oh, no, they don't give a
shit. Here you go.
Yeah, definitely.
But you go to GameStop or EB or Game or whatever, you go to those places and they're like, oh, you didn't pre-order? I'm sorry, we only have 3 copies.
Yeah.
What the? Because their margins are just apparently so bad. They're really just pawn shops for old games now.
They really are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're like, you know, pawn shops sell games too. It's just
which is why I really, really want digital to really take off, because I really want them to just get fucked over.
I kind of agree, but I also really like owning physical copies of things, because even when people stop supporting the physical copy, then I can just break it and make it work.
Will it even be possible for me to go to the EB? Say I get my TV and one day on a whim I decide I want a console. Would it even be possible for me to walk in there and get a new one? Or would they would they try to pressure me into, like, I imagine they take me into a room in the back, they rough me up a little bit with a swinging lamp, you know, in the background, and or hanging overhead, right? And they punching me and stuff like that, trying to get me to buy the pre-owned or whatever console.
Well, they'll try to push pre-owned, but they don't push it that hard. They're just
They really don't push the pre-owned,
and then you can just be like, yeah, but if I get the regular one, it comes with a game, so all, you know, that kind of evens out, and they'll be like, that's true, man, sign here. Like, they don't care that
much. Oh, okay.
They just have to say they tried.
Yeah, it's one of those, the other thing, now, they may not have the specific game packed in bundle you want.
Mm.
That would be the only thing where they don't necessarily have the stock, especially depending on the time of year you're going in.
Yeah.
And this is why I own Batman.
Like, when I got my Xbox, they were, almost all the bundles had gone.
Mm-hmm.
There weren't a lot left.
Yeah.
Because I bought it right before all the holiday bundles came out. So they were dumping stock and weren't bringing more in, because they knew they would have to get a bunch of new bundles. So they didn't want to take up all that SKU space, right?
Yeah.
So that's going to be the only thing that may or may not hold you back when you buy your console, is they may or may not have the specific
on which
game
console.
Hopefully it's Destiny, man.
There's still plenty of those.
Yeah, there's still plenty of those.
I think bundling Dark Souls or anything in the Dark Souls or Bloodborne with a console is probably a great way to get the person to return it that same day. From what I've heard about how unforgiving those games are.
That there's not going to be a bundle for that, unfortunately. If you want a bundle, it'll be with, on the PlayStation side, it's going to be Uncharted 4 came out. Get the Uncharted bundle and get Uncharted Remastered 1-3 as well.
They already have that bundle's already out.
Yeah.
Oh, perfect.
The remastered Uncharted's. Yeah.
Mm, I'm not interested in that game. Tomb Raider. That sounds weird. Anyway.
Uncharted is just like playing an Indiana Jones movie.
Isn't it Tomb Raider, though? You're a dude, but you're Tomb Raider, right?
No, it's. I don't know. The weak part of those games is the fact that they really want to be a cover shooter, especially in the early one.
But their cover shooting mechanics are terrible.
Yeah. Well, there's no such thing as good cover shooting mechanics. It's a terrible idea in any video game. But yeah, theirs are particularly heinous. They don't have the Gears of War fun factor to it. It's just, I've been hiding behind this rock for 7 waves, killing thousands of people, and I'm the good guy.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, one last news story.
Sure.
The first great war in nearly 2 years has begun in EVE Online.
Oh, really?
Now,
nice.
I don't play EVE, but I'm always fascinated by the stories of the scale of the wars and the corporate backstabbing and espionage and all of that that goes on. It's always fascinating. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so there's been I can't remember what their original name was for this Grand Alliance, but they're known now as the Imperium. Mm-hmm. And they've kind of had a chokehold on a rather large area of the Eve space.
Yeah.
And a bunch of stuff has happened recently that they've kind of united a bunch of disparate groups against them. And all of these disparate groups who would never in their wildest dreams work together are now working together.
Wow.
To take down the Imperium.
Nice.
Hmm.
So it's going to be big. It's going to be long. The Imperium has already had at least one somewhat significant member defect and just break with the Imperium.
Wow.
Reportedly,
I can't wait to hear how much money this costs.
Reportedly, after the Imperium attempted to defend their territory for a day.
Yeah.
They did that, and then they immediately peaced out. They're like, we're gone. See ya.
Yeah.
So it sounded like they were trying to bait the Imperium's super fleet into that engagement.
Hmm.
From the sounds of it, but no luck. So I always follow that with great interest. The amount of spin that both sides have, because both sides have their own like subreddits and like dedicated websites.
Yeah.
Dedicated to like spinning the news that comes
they
out.
They literally
of
have PR like, people. It's
yeah,
insane.
Like it's PR. It's great, and some of them are. It's not always written in the way that an outsider can understand.
Yeah.
There's a lot of terms they throw around that you kind of got to just learn as you go in context. But I always find it fascinating. And it's exciting because it sounds like Eve is going to become a much more volatile game for the next little while, which is always great to read about because there's so many good stories that come out of Eve.
Yeah, their metagaming is insane with the espionage, pretending you're friends with people for like months or even years and then turning on them overnight.
Yeah.
I love that.
Some hiring someone to drive to a suburb and turn off the power.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that one of the super carriers can't show up. That game is fucked in so many amazing ways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a gamer's game, like through and through, huh? Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
That's it for my news, Andy. Unless you have anything, let's move on to our main subject.
Yes, please. Okay, so I'm gonna try to reframe.
Handle the introductions.
I'm gonna try to reframe this a little bit again. Okay. We talked about this a couple times in the pre-show and stuff like that. Okay, so basically the topic is esports, but more specifically, what makes a good esport? Why have certain games failed to achieve that? Specifically using the examples, and we're going to branch off a bit, obviously, bear with us, folks, of StarCraft, the original, like, starting Korea and stuff like that, obviously a big esport. Let's not try to waste too much time there, though, okay? Moving on to StarCraft 2, why couldn't they make it work as well as StarCraft Brood War? And then, in current day, this rise of esports. I mean, the fighting game community is extremely rabid, but small, you know, but extremely rabid. And then we have League of
Legends. Rabid and very insular as well.
Yeah. Then we have the rise of the MOBAs, League of Legends, Dota 2 doesn't quite count because, they do. It does, honestly, because it's a great esport, even though they don't have the business model that technically makes sense. But we'll get into that later. And CSGO. And CSGO. Because we have some good points on CSGO being not that spectator-friendly, But apparently it's doing pretty well for its fans, as an esport anyway, right? So, I mean, let's get this started. StarCraft Brood War. I mean, that was, like, the first esport. Like, that was, like, technically there was, like, Pac-Man competitions and such like that before, right, guys? But, I mean, it was the first esport that went, like, that blew up, right? That was big. Sponsors, and admittedly it was, you know, only in Korea, but still.
That's not entirely true.
You still had teams
primarily
Liquid and Evil Geniuses.
Primarily in Korea.
With players in the West. But yes,
the 1998 Brood War beta tournament was huge.
Mm-hmm. I remember reading the battle reports.
Primarily a Korean phenomenon.
Yeah. So then we have StarCraft II, which is designed before League of Legends. If I recall correctly. It was before League of Legends. Wait, was it? Yeah, it must have been. Anyway, we should have figured that out before. But yeah, before League of Legends comes out, it has David Kim working on it. He used to be a StarCraft pro, right? If I recall correctly.
Yes, we'll be bringing that back to a lot of similarities.
So. Hardcore gamer. I'm going to bring up what I feel is the biggest mistake with StarCraft II. Where they went wrong. I don't need to blame it on one person entirely, but the problem is when you're coming from an esport that developed such an exceptionally diverse metagame in terms of strategies and playstyles, and you're trying to design that from you know, square one all over again, you kind of go a little too ham. And my complaint about StarCraft II and why I don't think it's as good of an esport is it's a fantastic spectator sport. I mean, you can actually explain to, you know, if your parents are watching or whatever, sort of what's going on the map. And, like, they can just see from the mini-map alone, like, red players winning, blue players losing just based on map control and such like that. And the sick plays with the abilities, right? I mean, there's some good stuff going on there. But if you don't have the casuals constantly playing the game because they're just pissed off at how frustrating it is to play, what's the point of running the eSport? It's not getting anyone else to play the game. And sponsorship deals, as we know, even in League of Legends, don't really make enough money on their own. So throwing that over to you and see if you guys have any sort of counterpoints or where you think StarCraft 2 went wrong.
SC2 is such a good spectator sport. I was once watching it at a New Year's party back when it first came out with Wings of Liberty, and a couple people there who have never even seen StarCraft began watching and asking questions, and by the end were cheering for a player that they decided they liked.
Yeah, right?
So my only counterpoint is, and this is more specifically towards the West, is the West never had quite the scene that Brood War has had in Korea.
Definitely not. I mean, so that's an understatement.
I would argue that in itself, StarCraft II actually grew the Western esports scene.
Okay. Technically, specifically
for StarCraft, it's bigger in the West now than it was in the Brood War days. It's more popular. The problem is, they're not just competing with themselves anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
They're now competing with the leagues, the Dotas, the Hearthstones, the Counter Strikes. The tournaments that get million plus concurrent viewership.
Yeah.
That's the real problem.
But don't you think, I mean, okay, yeah, it did come out. It came out a year before League of Legends. So 2010. League of Legends was 2011. Don't you think that part of that is because there aren't enough people worldwide playing the game compared to those other games you mentioned? Like, you know, the MOBA, the popular MOBAs and such daily? To have the background to appreciate it.
Yes, this is actually a factor. It is one of many factors that's going against StarCraft 2.
I mean, how often do
so many things.
How often have we been ripped back into playing League of Legends when we are like, oh, it's just frustrating, we tilt, like, you know.
No, because I'd argue that to be a good esport and to be successful as an esport, it's important to be able to draw in just those spectators. You need to be able to grow by spectators, not by people who play the game.
Okay, that's good, because that leads me to my next point.
Like, because it's not sustainable. Esport growth in itself, as a whole, is not sustainable if you're only concerned with the people who play your video game. That market is too small. You need to be able to grow that beyond and into other realms. And you're seeing that with some games, Dota 2, Heroes of the Storm.
I totally agree with you. You know, when you only have 30 million unique players logging on to play a day worldwide your video game, I mean, what's the point of even, you know, trying to do anything for those? But come on, are you kidding me, man? There's 30 million unique players. And that's like a stats from a couple years ago, playing League of Legends every day. Are you kidding me? Riot, love them or hate them, balance-wise, you know, and I bitched at them a little bit in the, you know, earlier in the show about their latest patch. But love them or hate them, they are really great at releasing patches that are good for casuals and still acceptable to the pro scene. Why couldn't StarCraft do that? Why couldn't Blizzard do that? Why?
Lots of reasons. Well, here's the thing. Well, a big thing, kind of a bit of a counterpoint to Kyle's last argument there. The thing about a spectator sport is, on some level, the person watching needs to be able to see the cool thing happen and be able to think, I could recreate that.
Mm-hmm.
I can go outside with my basketball and I can make that 3-point jump shot.
Right.
I can go over and play Smite on my, I don't know, Xbox One. It's on Xbox, right?
Yes.
Like, that's a big deal.
Yeah.
Like, maybe not your entire group, not everybody watching it is going to think that, but some of the people are, and that's a big fucking deal. And StarCraft, I'm sorry, but that's not true. You see a thing and you go, well, I'll never be able to fucking do that. I can barely follow what happened.
Yeah.
It looked cool as shit, though.
That's definitely the way I feel about it, man. Yeah.
There's a lot of... StarCraft 2 had a lot of blunders on its way. A lot of this, as you pointed out in the pre-show, is we're only seeing this now because it's hindsight.
Mm-hmm.
But they were working closely with GOM TV, who knows what it took to do this in the first place. With Brood War, balance was never quite all there. A big part of the balance of online tournaments was they made specific maps for the season that would hurt certain races but help others.
Right.
So that it would cause the game to be more dynamic and you could have different strategies that would work.
Like a meta shift in League of Legends.
Yes.
Well, the whole reason they shift up the meta so often, like just on purpose, is just to shift things. You know, and it works for the business model too, because it gets the pros playing different champions, which allows them to monetize the skins for the different champions and such, right? Yeah. Yeah.
Correct. Like this.
But they weren't doing that in StarCraft.
I think you need to point out that the reason StarCraft Brood War was able to be successful as an esport in any way is because the meta shift was handled by a third party.
Right.
Blizzard actually wasn't involved in this.
Because we're talking about patching cycles back then that were like 6 months. And that was considered good for the time. And now I'd say 6 months is like, why even bother releasing the box copy in the first place? If your patching cycle is 6 months, get the fuck out of the market. Your patching cycle needs to be, I would say, monthly. If for your first year, monthly or bust. So...
You know. Even if that patch is just changing the build time of the bunker again.
Even if it's tiny, tiny stuff. We're not talking about adding new units or anything like that.
They were convinced that was going to fix the game.
But I mean, you know, then they had other issues with the pro scene, which Kyle Pett knows quite a bit about. I hope he can weigh in on. And you as well, of course, Andy. But failing to protect the regions was a huge problem.
How can you root for someone Mm-hmm. When you don't know, like, that's a big part of it. I know it's a bit xenophobic, but at the end of the day, the thing about the Olympics is there's my guy. Oh, he lost.
So there's that argument. Yes, sure. But the counter argument to that are the professional sports leagues. In traditional sports, you have your top tier and everyone goes and plays in. That's where the best players play. Right?
Yeah.
The English Premier League has players from Italy, Germany, Canada, the U.S.
Like, it's got the most money.
Spain.
Yeah.
Like, the best players play there. They play in the Spanish league. Mm-hmm. They play in the German league. They play in the Italian league. Like, the best players play. And it doesn't matter where they're from.
So appeal to tradition.
To those fans.
Appeal to tradition,
yeah,
because
you
it's that way.
Yeah, you do appeal to tradition. So part of the problem with StarCraft specifically, and we've brought this up before, is that it's a single-player game.
Mm-hmm.
And,
oh, yeah. No team sport. That's huge.
And that's the thing that teams are what gets fans attached to something. And you did see this a little bit in StarCraft. Evil Geniuses did a pretty good job early on at marketing their players and making you care about their players.
Yeah. Because that's
brand.
What
Idris
North America
the bad
cares,
boy.
But, yeah.
But right? like and that was good so that could have worked if, you know, other teams had done the same thing. But we just had EG seemed to be the only one trying to embrace that team.
Yeah.
Everyone else was just kind of, it's a single player game. Like, this is what it is. It's tennis. It's golf.
We really needed to bring back the Star League with the whole 5-on-5 and you played until you ran out of players.
Yeah, that actually sounds like fun. I'd love to see a 2v2 tournament, you know, but I think it's too late for StarCraft 2. I don't think that they will ever be able to make any gains in their esports market in terms of audience, in terms of monetizing it whatsoever with sponsorships or anything like that. I mean, one day it's going to be like the Warcraft 3 tournaments I told you guys about, where like the prize pool is $800. And, you know, the prize pools right now for most StarCraft tournaments are reasonable, right? I mean, you know, you could live off of them.
Yeah,
if you're
for the big ones, they're still...
Yeah.
The There's big too ones, many
the,
of them.
The WCS, all the Blizzard-sponsored ones, they're still rather large prize pools.
But when a game company like Riot throws down the gauntlet and says, you know what, $5 million prize pool for this, remember that was the first season, right? $5 million prize pool for tournaments. We're going to fund out of our own money. And that's advertising capital for them. That they're just spending on promoting their game so that people keep playing their game, keep getting bored, so they buy the skins because they're bored. You know, that's the business model talking. That's what allowed Riot to step it up with the regular seasons. How much money a year were they dumping into that? You know, that's a lot of money. And again, sponsorships do not cover it all. They do not cover those sorts of costs. So why was Riot willing to do that? Because they have a business model where it makes sense. You ship a few more units, a few more box copies of... StarCraft Brood War was in print up until StarCraft 2 came out, basically. That means they were constantly making new copies, right?
You can still buy Brood War in the Blizzard store.
Yeah. Yeah,
so, but they're no longer printing the game.
Yeah, but they're no longer actively printing it. I mean, that's pretty insane. But StarCraft 2, I don't know. I don't have any information on that. I don't think anyone has access to that sort of information. But I don't think they're printing it anymore. So, I mean...
No, that's,
I feel the shift coming. So before we leave StarCraft history,
That's partly the shift to digital, though. And specifically PC. PC has embraced the shift to digital far more than the console space.
And that client that Blizzard put out like 4 years ago, or no, at the start of StarCraft 2, so 7 years ago, it was brilliant, right? I mean, what a beautiful client to play in. The where all your games are listed.
The Battle.net launcher.
Yeah.
I was.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like Wings of Liberty was standalone, and
yeah, I think it came with Heroes came of the Storm or Heart of the Swarm. Yeah, yeah. So sorry, yeah, like yeah, six years ago or five years ago. Anyway, yeah. Sorry, Andy. One more point you wanted to make while we.
I just want to hit a quick history of StarCraft's meteoric rise and fall here. Like, I think
day nine
for people who don't know, it's important that they know. Well, we got to start way back when.
Oh. Okay.
I mean, we've got to start with the first like meaningful tournament that I remember. I'm sure there were ones before it, but I've already mentioned it. It was the 1998 King of the Beta, I think it was called.
Yep.
It may have had a different name, but that's basically what it was.
Zillion winning with insane micro against Reavers with the Marines. Yeah.
Zillius won with what was kind of noted to be like the first time micro was ever mentioned as a thing.
Yeah.
He had a shuttle and he dropped Reavers from it and picked them up right after they fired. It was said by the announcer that it was a shuttle that fired Scarabs. It was something no one had ever seen before.
And
it was rad as hell to watch.
His opponent microed Marines in one at a time to try to attack the Reaver when the shuttle died to run the Reaver out of Scarabs.
Scarabs, yes.
Yeah. So there was micro on both sides of the players at the time. Sorry, I just wanted to interject and say that.
Yeah. Yeah, and the entire game, though, this is, at least for me, this may not be for everyone, this is where micro was like bore in my brain. And then came the giant micro revolution with the Emperor, you know.
Boxer?
Yes,
yeah,
Boxer,
I mean,
of course.
He was known for basically sending like little squads on incursion missions to do very strategic things and just like whittling his opponent down with supreme micro, right? Like,
yes, yeah. He was able to micro a group of six Marines around a lurker and not take a single hit.
Yeah. So, you know, and the Korean scene took that to its high, right?
I think the quintessential Boxer experience is the carriers are coming in, there's observers with them, and Boxer just has a couple wraiths and a medic. Yeah. And you're going, you're waiting for him to type GG, but a comm stat goes down. The medic walks forward and blinds both of the observers. The wraiths just eat the entire air army.
Yeah.
It's just something you don't expect to see, and it's brilliant.
You know, Terran versus Terran with lines of Goliaths against lines of Wraiths. And, I mean, we've seen a lot of plays, and a lot of that was Day 9. And heading into StarCraft 2, just to bring us back, you know, a little bit back up to the present, like, we were pretty pumped about this as an eSport, weren't we? I mean...
Oh, the King of the Beta tournament for Wings of Liberty was amazing. Idra was a dark horse winner there, like... And it's so good. Look, Zerg actually can win something, because up until then it had just been, we completely fucked up the balance on the Sentinel things.
Oh. Can I just interject while we're still beating up Blizzard a little bit here? They're balance team, so this is outside of just their overall design team. So David Kimmon making the game, in my opinion, a little bit too micro intense for us oldies, but the balance team in general, I mean, Zerg had no cool shit in Wings of Liberty. They didn't get any cool shit in Heart of the Swarm. They finally got some cool shit in Legacy of the Void. I just, as a Zerg player in general, I'm pretty pissed off. Not to mention the fact that even if you're a casual player, you need to micro a lot more to play Zerg than any other race, which is supposed to be the macro race, which just has me smacking my skull in confusion and frustration right now. I mean, why would the race with the most macro mechanics require the most micro? That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah,
so,
sorry, you're no I Love Oof.
Yeah. incredibly, incredibly frustrating. But we were pumped about the pro scene, weren't we? Like, all of us were really excited about it. We started watching pros on live stream back then, remember?
I stayed up until 5 a.m. multiple days in a row to watch the first GOM tournament.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember that, the Korean, because it was in Korea, so you had to, yeah.
And I think that's where one of the first missteps happened, because right after that tournament ended, they started the next one. The winner hadn't even gotten to, like, enjoy their win, and they were already like, and season 2 begins now!
Yeah.
And made everything meaningless.
Well, Heroes of the Storm kind of pulled the same stunt this year, actually, by the way. They had about a month off season, so...
Those who don't learn from history.
And that's Blizzard's esports department doing that, so, you know, direct now. Anyway, heading into
just to bring it back real quick, I just want to point out that that Zilius who won the Brood War beta tournament is the same Zilius who is the design director at Riot.
And
you learned these lessons.
Has the character Zillion named after him, who was a wise time wizard. So,
notice that a large thing about League of Legends is every character is high micro intensive, and then we have a team game where everyone's only controlling one unit, but that's one really fucking involved unit. And so it can make it so you see rad shit happen.
And that's the beauty, and I want to kind of bring up this point now that you brought it up, because I think it segues pretty well, is that the risk-reward and of champions in League of Legends compared to the risk-reward of strategies in StarCraft II, it's completely bonkers to compare the two. We're comparing apples and oranges, but I mean, like, if I'm a Zerg player, I have two cheese strategies for the low elo player, right? I have two, basically. I have one base roach, or I think it's two base roaches now, because they, you know, the changes in legacy, right, which make getting a second base a lot faster, or rush, zergling rush. That's basically it. That's basically the strategic diversity we have. I mean, if I'm a lowly player, I can't pull off the more micro intensive strategies and such like that, so I can't mix these caster units in, which is really what I want to play. In League of Legends, there's a champion for everybody, right? There's the high skill cap, high reward, but high risk to play because they're very difficult to play. And then you have the low skill cap, you know, targeted with one skill shot, maybe, you know, that's
and
maybe.
And then if you're really bad, there's Riven.
Or Yi. I mean, yeah. Or Master Yi. So, I'd argue, actually, Riven has a pretty high skill cap. It's just her skill ceiling just is kind of, you know, puts her head and shoulders above other champions, I think, you know. But anyway, or skill floor, whatever it's called. Anyway.
Sure.
So just design-wise, from a casual's perspective as to why I don't play and therefore don't watch one of those games anymore and why I play and watch the other one is because I'm low elo. I can play Master Yi. I can play Rengar. I can play some of the lower elo, lower skill cap champions in League of Legends and still have some fun that my favorite players in the LCS are playing. I don't have to play all of their high skill cap champions, right? So, sorry, Kyle Pett, you haven't said anything in a while, so.
You guys were going off on StarCraft, wherein I had nothing to seriously contribute. I was never that into the StarCraft.
Let me pose the question then, if you don't want to talk about the StarCraft at all or anything like that. Why do you think that MOBAs in general, combined with CSGO, specifically League of Legends and Dota 2, have succeeded where StarCraft has failed? A, because I know you already sort of disagree with us in that it's failed because you think it's more successful than Brood War was in North America, but let's get past that point and say, why are they so big internationally and StarCraft isn't? When it was a bigger company heading in and...
It's a multitude of factors. Mm. Part of it is the team oriented aspect of all of those.
I believe this is a large portion.
Yeah.
The other thing is there are also genres that are more popular now. And we saw that trend happen during Warcraft 3, especially.
Yeah.
I mean, let's leave out Counter-Strike, because first-person shooters have always been there.
Bad for spectators, but good for the people, who play the game.
And Counter-Strike has always been that game, especially on PC.
Yeah,
it's true.
Counter-Strike has been there since 1.6 or earlier, right, Andy?
Earlier than 1.6, but 1.6 is what codified it.
you played in the amateur scene then.
Yes, I did.
So, like, that goes back a long ways. So Counter-Strike was always going to have that. And that's one of the reasons,
for a year of college.
That's one of the reasons why Counter-Strike is still popular. It's partly that it has that lineage. It has 1.6, it has Source, and now it has CSGO. Like, it's been an evolution. You may or may not agree with some of the steps they took along that evolution.
Yeah, I certainly don't.
Because I know a lot of 1.6 players did not like the jump to Source. I know a lot of Source players didn't like the jump to CSGO because it went back a little bit more into the 1.6 roots. Me, as someone who just played Counter-Strike on the Surface, I didn't really notice anything. Because I'm not good enough to understand the depths of intricacies of Counter-Strike.
Apparently, okay. The differences between the weapons is pretty crazy in terms of your strategic playstyle versus, like, running gun and the accuracy of them versus the stay-put weapons and such. So there is something very interesting going on there, but I don't think we want to go deeper into that, as you were saying. So.
No, especially because Andy's the only one who could really talk much with any real knowledge
of how maps work and how and where the first bullet out of every gun goes while you're running.
You know what? Let's save that for Overwatch, because you can explain to us when it blows up as an esport.
You know, you keep believing that.
If it blows up as an esport, you can explain that to us.
So going back, we saw the trend in Warcraft 3, specifically with the original Dota. As more and more people played that than they were playing the Warcraft 3 ladder.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that community just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And I think what you see there is the trend away from RTS. And it's an industry-wide trend. There aren't that many strategy games anymore.
Yeah.
It's a very niche market.
And the strategy games that do still exist have also tightened their focus. So it's smaller maps. You don't really move the screen around that much.
Yeah, this new Company of Heroes game that's apparently supposed to be coming out is, it's narrowed its focus on what people loved about the first two. So, yeah.
And you may want to look into Clash Royale. Try not to pay them money, because that is a deep, dark hole. But it's a surprisingly okay RTS card builder. Except it's a weird game.
So I feel like one of the reasons why Dota 2 and League of Legends are so popular is that's just the way that the market trended, especially amongst players who play the RTS games.
Yeah.
There seemed to be something that specifically Warcraft 3 players gravitated towards
the MOBA
the original Dota.
Yeah.
The original Dota, it didn't just start with Dota. Because prior to Dota being big, you had things like Hero Arena and other things in Warcraft 3 like that. That were much more, you know, you control the one unit.
Yeah.
You've got lots of fine control.
People seem to like that.
And yeah. And there's always the proto Aeon of Strife.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
in StarCraft,
it just felt like,
well, it's the precursor to Dota.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was in StarCraft 1.
Yeah.
Is the precursor to Dota.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I just feel like that was where the industry was heading, and they just took it out of being map, like a custom map game.
Yeah.
Warcraft 3 into these standalone products. League of Legends, Heroes of New Earth, Dota.
They took out the barrier to entry.
This is where both of you guys disagree with me. Why is League of Legends more successful as an esport than Dota 2? And I'm not talking about the audience numbers, because the audience numbers are very comparable, and it's very impressive that they managed to crowdsource that prize pool and that grand prize for the Dota 2 finals last year. That was unprecedented, right? But
it's easier to follow.
Is that the only reason, Andy? Because you know what I think the reason is. I've been poking at it the entire time I've been mentioning it, and I'm sorry.
I disagree with you. It has nothing to do with the business model, Pete.
It is the business model through and through. It is through and through the business model. You see, the thing is that Valve has no reason, because their primary business model is selling other people's games on Valve now, right? It's why they're not as interested in development now as they used to be. They have no reason to want to get people to keep watching the game. So
why not? Do you know what you watch Dota 2 in?
You can buy Steam,
you watch it
Dota,
in the
right?
Steam client.
Well, I actually
which
didn't know
that.
That
they got to advertise to you other games you might want to buy from them. As far as they're concerned, the longer you play Dota, the more money they're going to get from you.
I really do think that, hear me out, I really do, because I've said this a few times to you guys, but the audience hasn't heard every single argument about it. When you have a company that's business model is the more loyal they are to their customer base for releasing a pipeline of quality content. The original skins that were just recolors were trash. They have not released a bad skin in a very long time, though. I'd say 2 or 3 years now they have not released a boring skin, okay? The Riot's pipeline is insane compared to Blizzard, compared to the resources that they had versus Blizzard at the time when the company was just starting up, compared to the resources of Valve. I mean, we're talking about a company that, at the time that the game was being developed, not now that they got the Tencent money, but at the time, we're talking about a game that had very little resources, and their pipeline is strong, guys. I mean, it's strong. I mean, coming back, I was shocked the transition from hero to hero for skins, new skins released every 2 weeks. Aurelion Sol released so shortly after, I forget which champion off the top of my head, but anyway, Jin. I mean, it's been 3 months. This pipeline is awesome, dude. And you know, Blizzard's starting to catch up with Heroes of the Storm. Their pipeline is starting to get there, but it's because they're copying, in my opinion anyway, it's because they're copying the same model, so there's motivation for them to have that pipeline in place, because the stronger the pipeline is, the longer it is, and the more shit they can cram through it, the more money they make. You know,
Blizzard's
the 80-20
had that rule. Motivation that, for a while that, with the Blizzard launcher, so they can tell you, go buy more shit in Hearthstone
that has
every time you try
to
boot up the game.
Bear, you still haven't sold me on that's why it's more popular.
Sorry, the basis of this business model has allowed them to have the first in North America regular season viewing of esports. In North America, the first. It's not just tournaments whenever somebody feels like maybe making it. And how many esports?
You say that, but when you contrast it to the Dota 2 tournament system, it's not... Oh, whatever, whenever someone kind of feels like it. No. They have four major tournaments, one every quarter.
Which is good. But Kalpet, how many?
They're simply using a different style of competitive system. League of Legends prefers the North American style, leagues, playoffs, all of that. Mm-hmm. Which makes sense. They're a North American-based company.
And I love mid-season playoffs, too. I think they're a great idea.
And whereas Valve, and this is probably partly because Dota is so big in China and Russia. Mm-hmm. Or Dota is so big in China and Russia when it was first under development.
Yeah.
They've gone with the major tournament style system, which is more golf, tennis, things like that.
Yeah,
there is nothing good. There is nothing wrong with that system. That system works if you embrace that system, which Valve has.
And
you personally, Pete, you like the convenience of being able to watch League of Legends every weekend at a set time, knowing that. However, a lot of people prefer the tournament style system where, you know, they have one or two weekends in a row where they can just binge on it, and then they're done. They go off, they play other games, they do whatever.
Sorry, Kyle Pet.
I'd be okay with that, but they just make so many fucking tournaments.
I'm going to interject here. How many third-party esports? How many third-party esports organizations have gone out of business or had to sell off to larger competitors and such like that in the last 5 or 6 years since we've been following esports with any amount of significance? What, three or four pretty big ones?
Two.
IPL, MLG, and I feel like there was another one.
No, those are the only two.
Only two? Okay. My point is, when those third-party companies and the ones that are still going on wake the fuck up and realize that sponsorships aren't making them enough money anymore because they're getting drowned by League of Legends, backed by a $4 billion a year revenue company, who's going to throw those tournaments? Exactly.
Well,
because their revenue is not tied to the success
Valve
of the game.
Valve is the one throwing their own majors.
Oh, really?
Valve's majors have nothing to do with these third-party companies.
They paid for the prize pool that enticed all the players and the production?
Yes, in fact, they paid for the prize pool by selling items in their game that if you bought it, a portion of it went towards the prize pool.
Did they
and
actually?
That's how they got the largest prize pool. Yeah.
That's how they get those prize pools, Pete.
Wow.
Yeah, they sell in-game items. You can put a hat on your character. I don't know why you want to.
Oh, like in TF2? The stability of Riot and League of Legends feels better to me. I feel like the bottom still, even knowing that, and thank you for correcting me, but even knowing that, I feel like the bottom can fall out of the other games at any moment in time, and I suddenly don't get any good esports coverage. Now, you could say the same thing about League of Legends and Riot, right?
Dota's not going anywhere.
Neither is Counter-Strike.
The fans really seem to love it. I still think that the League of Legends and Riot business model is the best for promoting an esport on a regular basis, and I think it shows with CS:GO and other such games that are kind of copying it. I mean, even Heroes of New Earth is still like breathing. I mean, it's down to one lung, but it's still kicking. And
I thought that closed.
No, it's still up, isn't it? Last time I checked.
I mean, that's sad. Someone needs to put it out of its misery.
Yeah. So, anyway, I don't know. Much better than that first generation fighter game or MOBA games. I don't know if you remember playing Demigod, any of you guys? Either of you guys? Yeah. Eight heroes, two added after release, and that was it. Really, really basic kits with kind of done in the Heroes of the Storm style without items, if I recall correctly. It was fun, but it was a temporary distraction compared to the ongoing metagame that is the Dota 2 and League of Legends. Anyway, I'm starting to see it your way a little bit. It's not like I'd care if Dota 2 ever, you know, went under or anything like that. But there's something about the League of Legends model that feels better to me. And that's sort of the thing you can't really kick out of me, I guess, at the moment. So,
because you don't care for the tournament style.
Yeah, you don't.
Also,
care
you
for
don't
the,
care for that game because that game is
rage inducing.
Well, it's different enough from League of Legends that if you like League of Legends, you'll never like Dota, and vice versa.
Yeah,
there's no one who plays both those games. Yeah. I mean, there might be, but
yeah,
I'm sure there are with the size of both games' fan bases, I'm sure there is overlap.
Gotta be some overlap, yeah.
Yeah.
So, sorry.
I said same.
I think we're kind of wrapping things up here. So,
yeah,
to conclude the topic, I'd like to toss out here, like, what's next for esports, and specifically in North America, because I think that's kind of what we wanted to, you know, right, cover here. What's next for esports?
What do I want from it, or
what do we want for it? Like, I would say that, you know what, after looking at Overwatch a little bit more, I don't think it's going to be the esports phenomenon I was originally hyped up to believe. However, I think it's probably going to be at least as popular as TF2 and CSGO's esports scenes are at the moment. Or TF2's was at its height, and CSGO's.
I wouldn't go that far. I'd say it's Overwatch will probably peak out more in the Halo, Call of Duty.
Oh, okay.
Sphere.
It's kind of a tier down, then, I guess.
I could see that. I still think it's going to struggle to get there, but I could see that.
I just like the meta that's sort of evolving where you have 6v6 and you kind of like choose like, let's go, you know, three of this class, one of this class, you know, one of that, you know, like I kind of like that. It sounds kind of good to me. So I think that's a more interesting meta. I think it actually has potential as an esport. What we've talked about before on podcasts that are only tangentially related to this one. It's kind of hard to design the map and the viewing system for viewership.
Very much so. First-person games, not exactly easy to view when
and Overwatch
you jump between characters and most of them are staring down a hallway the whole time.
Yeah, and Overwatch is parkour too, so it's multi-level as well. So it's not like flat maps. So, yeah.
It does have the interesting thing where everybody's just like, all right, we're going to rush them. Everybody go Winston or everybody go Tracer. And that's funny. That's not going to happen much in pro play, but it's still going to be funny when it does.
Yeah, you want a well-balanced team. Sorry, I've kind of had my, like, you know, because that was kind of mine. What are your guys? I'll throw it over to Kyle Pett first, I guess, and see.
Yeah. I want to see someone figure out how to view and properly capture first-person shooters.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I think that's the next big untapped market. I mean, yes, we have CSGO. Yes, CSGO is big.
Mm-hmm.
But that's... VR. It's a drop in the bucket compared to the player base of those games.
Yeah.
The viewership.
Right.
Like, the viewer... The amount of people that play shooters is nothing compared to how many people watch.
Yep.
So I think once they get over the hump of figuring out how to properly capture the action, they'll be on to something.
Yeah. I wonder if Blizzard has cooked up anything for that with Overwatch. I'm just saying that again because it's the, you know, next one. So throwing over to Andy on what your... Just thought, like, again, thoughts and opinions on the North American scene, what you'd like to see happen, the sky is falling, whatever.
Well, what I want is I want a region. I want regions. I want to have the home team. I don't think I'll ever get it because of the realities of how these games are actually played.
Yeah.
But
on land.
That's what I want. I want to be able to identify with a team and it not just disappear the next season.
Because mm-hmm. I know... Peace. Like, part of the reason I follow CLG is because they feel very regionally near where I'm from, just because their founder, Hotshot, is from this area. So, kind of Southern Ontario.
It's funny, because TSM is actually the team that was based closer to you and me than CLG ever was.
I was a TSM fan for a while. I mean, you know, when I was starting out in the scene, or whatever, right? I like TSM and CLG equally, you know.
Until you realized you had to pick one.
Kind of. That happened the first regular season, basically. So, for me. Or the first season with regular tournament events. It was, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is season one. So, yeah.
I mean, you know the real reason. He fell in love with the jungler.
I should have started this probably, like, the show with this. Rick Fox said that he thinks that esports overall, so that's including all... video games being played for spectators and such like that, is going to be as big, if not bigger, than the NHL in 5 years' time. That's his
prediction.
That is
not a lofty goal.
It's not, but... And
did
again,
he say afterwards outside of Canada? Because that might already be true.
We're splitting, and if you split it, if you split it between all the video game companies vying for it, like, and I guess it's kind of topic for another show. I kind of wanted to bring it up this show, but... like, do game designers, or is it a good idea to design your game from the ground up as I want this to be the next big esport? Or do you just try to make a really good game, and if a professional scene evolves around it, you kind of support it? Like,
I would like to answer this question now. I'm going to go with the latter, because every game we've seen that's been designed from the ground up to be an esport has not been an esport.
Tends to be problematic, isn't it? Yeah.
Except Dota 2.
Was that designed from the ground up to be an esport?
Dota 2 was designed as, hey, we